to be on the inside? We've got you covered. It's the Binsiders. Joining Jesse on today's show, it's Sam Madison, a native of the hustling, bustling metropolis of Monticello, Florida.
We only have one flashing light.
You only have the one flashing in Monticello.
And so that's simply, headed to the dog track.
That's why we have the blinking flashing light, because of the dog track.
You have one light where you're from?
That's it. And a lot of dirt roads.
Rounding out the crew, it's John Kenjemi, a big fan of the cheerleader cutaway shots during NFL broadcasts.
You know what? I went a little Brent Musburger last night. I made a mistake. I was sitting next to my wife watching. And I said, wow, that girl's pretty nice looking. What did you say? I said, yeah, she's ugly.
Terrible.
It was bad.
That was a good recovery. That was quick.
On today's show, we'll recap yesterday's big win over the Browns. And Tristan Jones is hanging out with the fans in our award-winning comment center.
Award-winning is right. And I have to tell you that these guys have really stepped up their game. And there's a nice competitiveness going on in here between these guys. So I'm proud.
It's Dolphins Monday on The Binsiders.
Oh, are those not the two best words in the English language? Dolphins Monday.
That's right.
Especially after a win. Welcome to the Finsiders, everybody. This is going to be a lot of fun. It is the start of a new era on the show, as it's our first day on Fox Sports Florida. So hello to everybody on television. Thanks for joining us this afternoon, and what a day to kick it off. What a day to kick it off, because there's so much good stuff to talk about a day after the Dolphins. 23-10 win over the Cleveland Browns. We've got a pretty packed first hour of the show for you. I'm not going to beat around the bush. We've got a lot to get to in the next 60 minutes or so. Here you go. Brent Grimes is going to join us in studio, one of the veteran defensive backs who was brought to this team to help create takeaways. Miami had three yesterday, all in the first half. The owner of the Miami Dolphins, Steve Ross, is going to swing by the studio. The head coach of the Miami Dolphins, Joe Philbin, is going to stop by the studio for his weekly visit. And the brand new president and CEO of the Miami Dolphins, Tom Garfinkel, is going to swing by the studio. That's all in the first hour.
Pack.
I hope you don't like to talk.
I don't like to talk. No. Not at all.
You're asking the wrong
guy. Yeah. No. Because there's no time for you. We're going to talk to those guys, and we're going to hear from them. It is a fun first hour of the show. Sam Madison is here. John Kenjemi is here. We'll take your text message questions at 347-347. Your phone calls at 1-855-GO-FINS. We'll, of course, recap the victory. We'll talk about the good and the bad. And there was bad yesterday. There were things that didn't go as well as they could or should, even for the first game of the season. Mike Wallace has been in the news since the game ended yesterday. We'll hear from Mike Wallace. He talked to reporters just about an hour ago in the locker room here at the Doctors Hospital training facility, and we'll bring you video audio of Mike Wallace and what he had to say in the locker room. Again, just about an hour ago. Throughout the show as well, we'll check in with Tristan Jones. She's over at the Metro PCS Comment Center. She is chatting with the fans online at Dolphins.com. Are they as excited for Dolphins Monday as we are?
They're just excited after a Dolphins win, no matter what. So, you know, they're chatting. They're excited about the win. As you mentioned, they want to talk about Mike Wallace. And, of course, the Fins defense.
Ooh. You liked that 2-9.
Oh, I love that.
He loved that.
The acrobatic catches, you know, being in position, turning around, making the play. The one with Nolan Carroll, that was a phenomenal play. And when you have opportunity to turn into the wide receiver and then locate the ball and it's right there, come up with the catch with him draped all over you. Perfect position.
They got the takeaways. One from Nolan Carroll, which you just mentioned. Two interceptions from Dimitri Patterson against his old team, which is always extra nice, I imagine. That's all in the first half. Now, offensively, they did not turn those three turnovers into points, really. Just 3 points total off of the three turnovers. But the defense was ferocious the entire afternoon, especially in the second half. 6 sacks, 16 hits of the quarterback. And, John, they held the Browns to 7%. On third down, 1 of 14. That's almost unheard of.
Jesse, it was fun to watch the Miami Dolphins play defense yesterday. They were downhill. They showed you the team speed that was generated from the front seven. And I think the defensive backs, Sam, were beneficiary of all that pressure. They were able to come up with the turnovers, get off the field, a lot of three and outs. We mentioned the turnovers. And it was nice to see the defense set the table for the offense. I thought, you know, Ryan Tannehill did such a great job at the end of that football game when they were able to go down and score and really ice the game. I think that's what you wanted to see. The success on third down on offense and on defense. They held the Browns. I think they were 1 of 14 on third down opportunities. So it was a team effort. Now, there are a lot of things to correct, but a lot of good things when you win on the road.
One of the things to correct would be the running game. I mean, it was non-existent. I mean, it's about as bad a rushing performance as you're ever going to see. 23 carries for 20 yards. I mean, you don't have to be any sort of mathematical whiz. No, that's less than a yard per carry. Less than 1 yard per carry. The longest run of the day was a 5-yard run from Lamar Miller. Most of the time, If I said to you, hey, you're going to run the ball 23 times and you're going to average less than a yard a carry, you would have said, well, we didn't win that game. But the Dolphins did win that game. They won the game somewhat comfortably after trailing 7-6 at the half. They really get on a roll in the second half. And that makes what Ryan Tannehill did that much more impressive. 24 of 38, 272 yards, a 34-yard touchdown to Brian Hartline, and a passer rating of 82.3. He also threw an interception. But, Sam, I mean, for the quarterback, the Cleveland defense in the second half, they pretty much knew the Dolphins were going to throw the ball, and he was still able to be pretty efficient.
And he definitely was. And the thing that I like about it, he was throwing to different wide receivers. He had opportunity to spread the ball around. Yes, you didn't get the ball to Mike Wallace as much as you wanted to, but that is to be expected when you're going to demand the number one wide receiver, and not only on top of the number one defensive back, and not only on top of that, you're going to have a safety over the top. So, you know, they were stacking the box, and pretty much this Cleveland Browns football team, they will be pretty much one of the dominant teams in the National Football League because they can stop the run. They are built to stop the run because when you play in that division, you're playing with Pittsburgh, you're playing with the Bengals and the Ravens. Those guys demand stopping the run. And now when you play the Miami Dolphins, who, of course, with the offensive line, something that we was trying to figure out and make this thing happen, you know, they solidified and said, hey, we're going to make you beat us, trying to find that second and third wide receiver, and that's what they did. Ryan Tannehill, you know, not throwing into double coverage. He had opportunity to find the one-on-one matchups, and he made some pretty darn good throws, and it was very successful for us yesterday.
Sam, I thought Ryan Tannehill was efficient with the football. I mean, there were plenty of times where he was getting rattled around in the pocket as well. He came back, he showed his toughness, and he showed his decision-making. As the game went on, Ryan Tannehill got better, and I think the guys around him played a lot better. They played up to the level of the quarterback, especially on third down. The Dolphins were 8 of 16, 50% on third down. That's one of those check marks that Joe Philbin talks about in the offseason. They needed to improve staying on the football field on third down, and they needed to find out if their quarterback could score either in the end of the quarter, in the second quarter, or at the end of the game when the game was on the line. Was Ryan Tannehill going to make the decisions and make the throws on target that he needed to make? He did that. He hit Brian Hartline three times on that 10-play, 85-yard drive to ice the game. He hit Brandon Gibson three times on that drive. He mixed in a move in the pocket a little bit, so that was nice to see from Ryan. He was decisive in the pocket, and his ball location down the field, especially that laser, that touchdown strike, the 34-yarder to Brian Hartline down that sideline on the double move, that was the best throw I think he's made in 2 years as a quarterback here.
It was as nice a throw as you're going to see the guy made, and as you said, as we've seen the guy make, Hartline finishes 9 catches for 114 yards, including the 34-yard touchdown, second biggest receiving day of his career. The first, of course, the record-breaking day against Arizona last season. Same defensive coordinator, by the way, in both those games. Ray Horton last year with the Cardinals, this year with the Browns. Brandon Gibson, 7 catches for 77 yards. 6 of his receptions went for first downs. Charles Clay had a nice day, 5 catches, 54 yards. And that brings us to Mike Wallace, who had the ball thrown his way just 5 times, all in the second half. 1 catch for Mike Wallace for 15 yards. He was not happy after the game. It's no secret. Everybody's heard about it. He was a little bit frustrated that he wasn't more a part of the offense. He spoke to reporters, again, right here in Davie just about an hour ago. Here's what he said sort of about the chemistry with Ryan Tannehill still being a work in progress.
Well, we just have to keep playing. Just keep doing what we're doing in practice. I think we do a really good job in practice getting chemistry going, and we just have to keep that going. It'll happen.
It'll happen. He's not that worried about it. It'll happen. It'll come. And he doesn't seem all that upset today. You get the feeling, heat of the moment, right after the game yesterday, a little bit frustrated, a little bit upset, and he certainly sounds like a guy that's moved on.
For the last 6 months, all we've heard is Mike Wallace is going to do this, Mike Wallace is going to do that, and then all of a sudden, leading up to the first game of the season, that's in your mind. Pretty much you want to make some plays, you want to make something happen, but you know that's the nature of this business. When you're going against an opposing defense and you've been going against them for a number of years when you were with Pittsburgh and understanding, they know who you are and what you can and cannot do. So when you go to the Cleveland Browns, they're not going to let you beat them. They want to see if this quarterback who's going into his second year, and a lot of critics and a lot of analysts said, hey, yeah, he did take a step, but it wasn't a big step. Okay, let's find out if he's taking that step. And that's what happened yesterday. Mike Wallace is going to demand a double team. and they're going to make Ryan Tannehill find the open guy because of the offensive line is not solidified as much as I would like to see in a lot of other people. They were saying, we're going to bring pressure and see what you can do with the ball, and Ryan Tannehill made them pay for it.
There is no doubt that the attention Mike Wallace got from the Cleveland defense yesterday was a big part of why Brian Hartline, 9 catches, 114 yards. Brandon Gibson, 7 catches for 77 yards. And Wallace, again, just about an hour ago in the locker room here at the Doctors Hospital training facility, was asked, you know, if he took pride, I guess, in helping to get those guys open.
I'm happy those guys had a great game. That's my teammates. Always happy when they do well. Every single time, every single catch, they work hard for it. And, you know, might open it up, but those guys get themselves open by running great routes and making great catches.
So he goes ahead and he gives some credit to those guys, which is the good teammate thing to do. But, I mean, look, we can watch this game over and over again, and the coaches will do so with that All-22 tape, and they'll see exactly the kind of impact that Mike Wallace had on the rest of the offense. Any doubt in your mind whatsoever that the attention that he got, not just from Joe Hayden, the Hartline touchdown's a perfect example. Hey, the safety rolled all the way over in front of Mike Wallace on that play. His presence on the field helped lead to some of those big numbers for the other guys.
Well, Ryan Tannehill explained that after the game perfectly. He wanted to go to that side of the field where Mike Wallace was, but the coverage dictated that he went to the short side, and that's where the double move and Brian Hartline was able to beat man-to-man coverage. You're going to get that. If you're Brandon Gibson or you're Brian Hartline in this offense, you're going to see a lot of man-to-man coverage where you need to win on that particular play, and Hartline was able to win because the Browns paid too much attention to Mike Wallace. Now, everybody knows that it's a physical game, but it's an emotional game, and after a game like that where you get one pass thrown your way for 15 yards, or you have a couple passes thrown your way, but you only get one reception, that's frustrating for a guy that was arguably the biggest free agent signing in the offseason. So you want to do your part, but the big picture, he did his part by drawing the coverage his way and allowing other guys to win versus man-to-man.
The other part of this is, it ain't going to be like that every week for Mike Wallace. I mean, look, you know, Calvin Johnson didn't do anything yesterday. Doesn't mean he's not going to do anything tomorrow. Mike Sherman, the offensive coordinator, spoke to the media earlier today, and he said, hey, the week after Hartline had the huge game at Arizona last year, he didn't do anything.
Right. Donut.
Yeah. And I mean, it happens. I mean, it's not just because it was this way yesterday for Mike Wallace doesn't mean it's going to be that way this Sunday in Indianapolis or any other day moving forward. Every team's going to approach it differently. And look, the quarterback did what he was supposed to do. He took what he had. And do they probably want to get the ball to Mike Wallace a little bit more? No doubt. No doubt about it. But you won the game. And that, at the end of the day, is very much the bottom line, a 23-10 victory over the Cleveland Browns. Lance Snacks wants to bring you to the Buffalo game. Visit Dolphins.com/Lance Snacks to register for a chance to win tickets for you and 19 of your friends to the Miami Buffalo game on October the 20th. Start your school year off right with Lance Snacks and the Dolphins. We'll take a break. As we said, a very big hour coming up. Brent Grimes, Steve Ross, Joe Philbin, and the new president and CEO of the Miami Dolphins, Tom Garfinkel, will all join us. Brent Grimes is coming up next. You're listening to the Finsiders, and you're watching us on Fox Sports Florida.
Now, back to the Finsiders, your all-access pass to the 2013 Dolphins.
Welcome back to the Finsiders Dolphins Monday after the team's 23-10 win at Cleveland yesterday afternoon. Jesse Agler, John Kinjemi, now we're joined in studio by quarterback Brent Grimes. Had a pass defense yesterday, couple of tackles in his first regular season game as a Miami Dolphin. First off, congratulations on the win, and how'd it feel to play a real game?
Thanks. Thanks for the congrats. But it felt good. It felt good. I haven't played a full game in a while, and it was like, a final step of rehab. You know, I got through a whole full game, and it was cool.
First game last year is when the injury took place. You played in the preseason, but obviously it's different. You're not playing four quarters. Was there like kind of a sense of relief at any point of the game? You're like, all right, I'm cool. We're good to go here.
I mean, I never had like a doubt or anything, but it was just cool to do it. And I was like, all right, you know, that last drive, it was like a 20-play drive.
That's right.
That's the only time I was like, whoa, I'm a little tired. But other than that, it was just like any other time.
It might have been long at the end of the game, but in the beginning of the game, you guys were getting off the football field. I mean, it went interception, punt, interception, punt, interception. And your coach Coyle has been preaching all offseason about the takeovers. That had to feel good as a unit coming off with all those three and outs and those takeaways.
Yeah, that was huge. That was huge. We, like you said, at the beginning of the game, we started off like I don't know if I'm correct, but I think the first five possessions was three turnovers.
Yeah.
So that's that's what you want. If you can do that, it's going to be tough to beat you. So, I mean, especially with the focus of the offseason being so much on takeaways and you know, forcing turnovers and such, that was cool to come out the first game and really put it into effect.
Grant Grimes is with us. We were just talking about the fast start for this defense. It was unbelievable. First possession of the game, the Browns are actually moving the ball, maybe as well as they did the entire day, but it ends with the Nolan Carroll interception. Next time they have the ball, you guys force three and out and a punt. Then Dimitri Patterson gets his first interception. Then another three and out and a punt. Then another Patterson interception. All that before they finally scored late in the first half. I mean, you can't ask for anything more than that as a defense.
Yeah, that was like I said already, that was awesome. That was an awesome start. And we just got it. We looked at the film. It's, you know, you never play a perfect game, but that's good. We can improve on things we saw in the film, and you don't want to play your best game in the first game. So, I mean, we got some things to work on, but it's definitely some things to, like, you know, feel good about.
Yeah, easier to make those corrections after a win also than it is after a loss.
Definitely, definitely.
We're talking to Brent Grimes as we look back at yesterday's season opening 23-10 victory over the Cleveland Browns. We mentioned it. I mean, the takeaways are such a big part of the conversation, and they were a big part of the game yesterday. But I think what was maybe most interesting and exciting to me was all three picks, especially two of them. I mean, those weren't like balls where the quarterback throws it right at you or anything like that. I mean, these guys went up and they made some really nice plays.
Yeah, and Nolan's was real nice. He tracked the ball on the deep throw. That was a nice pick. And then Demetri, especially his first one, when he the ball tipped and passed. You know, that took a lot of concentration, and he made a great play. And that's what you need to do in this league, because a lot of the times you got to go make your plays when they present themselves, and Nolan did and Dimitri did twice.
You said it. You have to be able to turn the football over if you're on defense, and the next thing you need to do is get off the field on third down, and you guys did an awesome job. One of 14, I think Cleveland was on third down. And, I mean, that had to be exciting for you guys, knowing that, hey, third down, you guys are getting those guys off the field and giving the ball back to your offense.
That's a big anybody that's played defense any level. I mean, if high school is the last time you play, you know, if you could get off on third down as a defense, that's a big, you know, it demoralizes the offense and it makes the defense feel good and it puts your offense right back on the field. So that was great. 1 for 14 is, that's an incredible day.
It's knocking it out of the park.
that's great. That's great.
You're feeling pretty good turning the page after 7% allowed on third down. How nice was the pass rush yesterday? We've talked all off season about the way the pass rush and the secondary got to work together to stop teams.
It was awesome. It was awesome. They I don't know if I'm right. I just know, like, off the top of my head, I think we had something like 6 sacks, and we had, like, 20-plus hits or something like that. So anytime you can do that to any quarterback, you know, that is not going to be a good fun day for them. And they're not going to be comfortable to make the throws and the reads that they have to make, because they're going to be thinking about, man, I'm about to get hit by this guy. Oh, somebody's going to hit me. Somebody's always in my face, so he's never comfortable. So that's a big deal.
You guys, you know, you mentioned at the beginning of the interview about, you know, your first game. It's the last chapter in your rehab. How was the communication for you being out there? You know, it's one thing to go through preseason and go through training camp and, you know, the crowd noise isn't there. I mean, you're in a hostile environment. Yeah. You only have your guys in white jerseys that are with you. How was the communication in the defensive secondary for you coming back?
It was good. We did a very, very good job. It was a couple plays that, you know, it was, you know, late or something, you know, but for the most part, we were excellent with it, and we're going to keep doing that throughout the season, because that's a huge part in secondary play is communication. And, like, you'll see a lot of, on some situations, a lot of big plays in this league is a mistake, a communication mistake, and somebody just running wide open. So we handled that pretty well this game.
You feel like there are any surprises out there as far as, you know, the preparation for Cleveland, or, again, you know, the first full game all sort of working together, or did everything kind of come at you the way you thought it would?
No, that's the one thing about this league. The first game is always weird. And then it was extra weird because they were a new staff.
Yeah.
It was the first game. You know, they're not really going to show what they're going to do in the preseason. I mean, you'll see some things, but it's – you know they're going to come out with completely offensively and defensively. So, I mean, you're aware of some of their main concepts, but they came out and did other things. But it was expected.
Very nice. All right, now you turn the page a little bit to the Indianapolis Colts. I know we're still just sort of getting past Cleveland and get back to work tomorrow on Indianapolis. But obviously, I mean, one of the better young quarterbacks in the National Football League to get ready for.
Yeah, everybody knows about Andrew Luck. I mean, was he the first pick last year? And he had a good year last year. He can make all the throws. He's an athlete. He can run. He's strong. So, I mean, he presents a lot of problems.
And Reggie Wayne's still getting it done all these years later.
He's still, and that's his favorite target, I believe. So, I mean, he gets a lot of passes. He still can catch the ball. He still runs his routes well. So they got a nice offense.
Very nice. Brent Grimes, 1-0 as a Miami Dolphin, thanks to yesterday's 23-10 win over the Browns. Appreciate the time. Thanks for coming in, and congrats again.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, there you go. That's cornerback Brent Grimes. Reminder that we're now just 2 weeks away from the home opener against the Atlanta Falcons. All kinds of great ticket deals, so check them out at Dolphins.com or call them up at 1-888-FINS-TIX. We'll take a break when we come back. The owner of the Miami Dolphins, Steve Ross, will join us in studio. You're listening to the Finsiders, and you're watching on Fox Sports Florida. On a very busy Dolphins Monday here in Davie, a lot to talk about, of course, in addition to the big win yesterday over the Cleveland Browns, and to discuss that and a lot more, the owner of the Miami Dolphins, Steve Ross, is joining us here in the studio. Just mentioned it, big day today, big win yesterday, big weekend. You're having a lot of fun right now, aren't you?
Oh, it's great to be here, Jesse, especially after weekends like this. I mean, it couldn't be any more exciting. It's probably one of the most exciting weekends of my life, anyway.
You had your University of Michigan Wolverines with a big win over Notre Dame. You sent those Irish back to Indiana, and then yesterday in Cleveland, you get the Dolphins the win. And then today, you get to announce the new president and CEO of the Miami Dolphins.
See the Miami Hurricanes win and all the excitement that's going on with Fox Sports, which is exciting for this show, exciting for you, and exciting for the Miami Dolphins. So, what could be better?
Yeah, sounds good to me, and we appreciate that. Let's talk a little bit about Tom Garfinkel. He comes in as the new president and CEO of this team. He'll oversee all the business side of the Miami Dolphins organization. How did you and your team settle on Tom Garfinkel to be the guy?
He's going to really be the CEO of the company. We're one organization. They're going to work together, both the football side, the business side. We are one organization, and I think he's the perfect guy to really lead us at this point in time.
It is not a simple, basic thing to hire somebody for that kind of position. Just listening to you and Matt Higgins and Tom kind of talk about it with the media, it sounded like a pretty complex process, but you also seem very, very happy with the result.
I mean, the reason why it's kind of a complex process is that we're looking to be the best sports organization there is. We do a lot of different things down here. I mean, you understand the importance of the Miami Dolphins to Miami-Dade County, to entire South Florida, and, bringing other big-time events here. And how we utilize Sun Life Stadium and what it means to the community. So we looked out someone who was really a proven leader, that had a lot of creativity, that was a strategic thinker, that is not afraid to think outside the box. And so we looked for the best professional in sports, in the sports industry.
And so you hired Tom Garfinkel to be the new president and CEO. What does his hiring mean for Dolphin fans?
Well, I think, the Dolphin fans are going to, one, how our organization is really operates and how it executes everything. I mean, I think now you can see the change that's going on with the Dolphins, with, Jeff Ireland and Coach Philbin and Tom Garfinkel. They're all the kind of same-minded people. They're about winning, they're dedicated, and they're very smart. And they want to be best in class. And that's what, you look to that any executive or owner would want to see in an organization. That's how I built up, my business career, is really dealing with the best and brightest people there are, not micromanaging them, and really building towards a common goal together. And that's what I look to have here at the Dolphins.
Very nice. We're talking to Steve Ross about the hiring of Tom Garfinkel. And you could tell, listening to him speak with the media earlier today, he's excited about getting to work with Joe Philbin, to get to work with Jeff Ireland. As you said, everybody's got to work together because priority number one is winning football games.
That's what it is.
It is.
No question about it. And it's great. And congratulations to you, though, with Fox and doing all those things and being on the air, being simulcast at the same time. And it couldn't be better, could it?
It's a pretty big deal. We can say hi to everybody there on television.
That's great.
We appreciate that. One last thing, this game yesterday. I mean, the Dolphins down 7-6 at the half. They come from behind. A really nice second half from Ryan Tannehill. It looks like a little bit of a glimpse of a bright future for this team.
Well, they've spent a lot of time practicing and working towards this goal. I think as you get to know Coach Philbin, you see that how organized he is and dedicated he is, and I think the work that he's doing. I think that it's this is a new season for the Dolphins, and I think we're back there to restore that future.
Very exciting. Steve Ross, appreciate you coming in. Congratulations on the hire. Tom Garfinkel, the new president and CEO of the Miami Dolphins. Congratulations on the wins, both for the Dolphins and for the Wolverines. And we look forward to catching up with you a little bit later on this season.
Great. Thanks, Jess. Pleasure being here.
There you go. The owner of the Miami Dolphins, Stephen Ross, will come back with more on this Dolphins Monday. You're listening to the Finsiders, and you're watching on Fox Sports Florida.
It's the Finsiders with your host, Jesse Agler.
It's the first Dolphins Monday of the 2013 season, and it's time for the Joe Philbin Show, presented by Everbank. The head coach joining us in studio, as he will every Monday throughout the season, which we appreciate. Congratulations. 1-0 is obviously the best way to start the season.
Yeah, it was a team win all the way. A lot of guys contributed, and certainly it was the way we wanted to start the season.
All right, takeaways. We heard about them all summer from the defensive players, the defensive staff, from you. I imagine you'd be very pleased with the way the defense sort of managed to live up to what they've been talking about.
Yeah, we just watched one in a team meeting. You know, it was 11 guys. Obviously, Dimitri had two of them, and Nolan had a real nice one. But it was a collective effort there, and guys stepped up, and we've made it a focus for a long time, and it was good to see us get three of them.
You are not alone in the world of football coaches when you talk about takeaways and you talk about third down efficiency. And yesterday, your offense, 50% on third down, and defensively held the Browns to 1 of 14, you know, 7% on third down. I imagine also you're pretty pleased about the way that all went.
Yeah, I thought our quarterback did a good job on third down, kind of taking what was there. You know, we put a good plan together. He executed it well. And for the most part, we had some manageable situations. We did have a couple long yardage ones. But then defensively, again, you know, 1 out of 14 to hold the opponent to one conversion on third down speaks volumes of not only the coverage, but the pressure we were able to put on the quarterback.
Coach, when you speak about Ryan's success on third down, that's one of those check marks going into the season that you talked about in the offseason. But not only there, but at the end of the football game, when he's able to put the team in position to score. Your overall assessment of Ryan's play yesterday against the Browns?
Well, you mentioned two things, that John, just there that I think really tilted it in his favor in terms of did he play well, did he not play well. Third down, where he was able to manage it well, both from a protection standpoint, he protected the football, he threw the football well on third down. And then the fourth quarter, we thought, I believe he was 6 of 7 in the fourth quarter, and again, he managed the game well in that particular phase of the game. So I thought those two areas he played well.
It was also nice to see Ryan Tannehill mature a little bit. He was able to get the ball out of his hand and get the ball to the open wide receivers. What was your assessment of the wide receiver play?
Yeah, they played well. We had a couple drops. We got to clean that up. And you know, but I thought overall they played well. I thought we took advantage of what they gave us in regards to coverage and scheme. Cleveland's a very, very good defensive team, and they're well coached. But I thought that you know, Ryan didn't force the ball. You know, one of the things, obviously, you know from your quarterback history, is as a training a quarterback and the progressions, we thought he was disciplined in regard to his progressions, going through them and not bypassing an open guy to force the ball to somebody else just because they maybe had the opportunity for a bigger play.
Talking about the offense right now, some of the things that went well yesterday. Brandon Gibson, 7 catches, 77 yards. I think 6 of his catches went for first downs yesterday, as we kind of tie that into the conversation about third down efficiency. Is that something guys sometimes have a knack for? Is that the nature of playing inside as a wide receiver? What goes into something like that?
I think it's a little bit of both, Jesse. There's no question about it. When we studied him last year, I think his production in regard to conversions on third down was very good a year ago as well. And one of the things that he does is he has a good feel for both zone and man coverage. He has a good feel for voids in zone. And he's a kind of a quarterback-friendly player. And, you know, you can kind of count on him to be in the right space at the right time and to read the coverage the right way. And those are all things that build trust with a quarterback.
Another guy that was quarterback-friendly was your tight end yesterday, Charles Clay. He had 5 catches for 54 yards. And it seemed like that one down the seam, it was a back shoulder throw, and he really just turned his body. He was really receptive to the quarterback. What was your assessment of Charles's play?
Yeah, I thought that was a big catch down the middle, as you just mentioned, John. You got to be able to torque your body down there, and I thought it was a good decision by Ryan. He had the matchup that he liked. You know, the linebacker actually came from the A-gap to cover him and pushed all the way out. So Charles had pretty good leverage. The linebacker did recover fairly well, and Ryan put a good ball in there. And then, you know, he had to take a tough hit after the catch and held onto the ball, so that was good to see.
We're talking to Joe Philbin a day after the Dolphins' 23-10 win over the Cleveland Browns in the season opener. Not everything went well, of course. It never does in a game. And the run game just wasn't there yesterday. And in talking to you and listening to you over the course of the last year plus, usually when you're asked a question about, oh, what went wrong, in blank, red zone, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And you say it's never one thing. It's not easy to sort of pinpoint it and say, this is what didn't go well. I imagine that's kind of the case with the run game yesterday. Lots of different things that will be cleaned up moving forward.
Yeah, we have to give our opponent credit. It's a good run defense, number one. Number two, we have to do a much better job, both in the blocking phase, and we got to do a better job breaking tackles and getting yards after contact. We have to do a better job on the perimeter with our receivers. So it's certainly a collective effort that we're going to need to address.
I know one guy that was accurate. That was Caleb Sturgis yesterday, Coach. He was big on the kickoffs. He was huge, you know, converting 2 of 2 for the field goals. And it's nice to roll a guy out there and have so much confidence in a young player.
Yeah. I like the way he goes about his business. I mean, he's kind of a quiet guy, doesn't say a whole lot, and just kind of, you know, does his thing. You know, he kicks it out of the end zone, comes back to the sideline, kicks it through the uprights, comes back to the sideline. Not a lot of hoopla. There's not a lot of fancy slogans or things on his uniform hanging out or anything like that. He just kind of does his job, and he did it well yesterday.
A lot of priorities coming into the season, Coach. You have check marks when you look at the turnovers, check marks on third down, sacks on fourth quarter scoring. What are some of the priorities that you're looking for now that you have a game under your belt going from week one to week two?
Well, obviously on offense it's balance. You know, we have to have better balance as an offensive unit. That's first and foremost. I think the second thing is protection of the quarterback on offense. And then on defense, we have to do a better job against pass. We gave up 7 explosive passes. That was one thing we fought in the offseason. It was something that we studied. We had given up too many a year ago. It was a big point of emphasis. Obviously, we haven't cured that one yet. That's going to be a big point for this week.
Joe Philbin is with us as we kind of turn the page from Cleveland to Indianapolis, a second consecutive road game coming up for Miami in week two. Colts opened up the season with a 21-17 win over the Raiders yesterday afternoon at home. Saw this team last year. How similar or not are the Colts to the team you saw last season?
Well, there's a lot of similarity. They've added some new players as we have, and so there's always transition. But you know, the core of the team is back, and it's a good football team. They play well at home. There's no question about that. And they found ways to win games last year. They were in a lot of close games a year ago, and they found ways to win them. And it's apparent that that's continued so far this year.
Facing another second-year quarterback in Andrew Luck, he's a guy that when the pocket's clean, the ball comes out on time, and when he's pressured, he has that innate ability to extend plays with his athleticism. What makes Andrew Luck so dangerous in your opinion?
Well, just what you mentioned, the ability to extend the play, and you know, he kind of has that pocket presence that's maybe hard to coach. You can't necessarily, it's hard to drill, it's hard to coach. You know, maybe that feel of the backside, he feels something coming and he has to step up and scoot out of the pocket. So that puts a premium on the discipline of the pass rush lanes. There's no question about it. We're really going to have to pay attention to that this year.
You mentioned those explosive plays against the defense, over 7 of them. You have a young guy in T.Y. Hilton, that's the youth, but the experience is in Reggie Wayne. So you've got two guys that can really get it done for Indianapolis.
Right. Reggie Wayne still plays at an incredibly high level. I mean, we've watched some film on him already, and we saw him some in the Cleveland cut-ups because they played in the preseason. He's just, you know, not surprisingly, he's been an excellent player for a long time. And as you mentioned, they have a very good young player with Ty Hilton. And they've added some speed on the outside. It looks like they've done a good job with Darius Heyward-Bey. And so they're going to be formidable, no question.
When people talk about the Colts generally, I think they probably talk more about the offense than the defense because of all those names that we just went through. But defensively, as you start to get ready for them, what do you expect from the Colts?
Well, they're well coached, number one. I mean, Greg Minuski is their coordinator, and Coach Pagano has a great history as a defensive coach in the league. So they're very, very sound in what they do. And, you know, they base out of a 3-4, but they're very multiple, and they have a good pressure package. You know, they've added some players, and it's going to be a good challenge for our guys.
All right, a couple of fan questions for Joe Philbin before we let him get out of here and on to some more important things. Matt on Twitter wants to know what you saw from the first-round pick, Deion Jordan, in his first regular season game.
Well, I really liked the contribution he made on special teams. Let's start with that. And did a very, very good job there. He also played well on defense and contributed there. Kevin and the staff did an excellent job utilizing him. I thought we involved him in the rush, but we also involved him in the coverage some. And I thought for his first time out, he did a nice job.
Very nice. All right, our buddy Kevin Nogle wants to know, for you, after a game, road game, you get on the airplane, do you decompress at all? Do you relax? Is it right to film? What do you do when you get on the plane coming back?
Yeah, a little bit of everything. I mean, you know, I'd like to, you know, visit with the staff briefly and go back in the air in the back of the plane and visit with the guys a little bit, the players. And then, you know, the world of video these days is so complex. The stuff's ready for you right away. And so we watch tape. We do a little bit of everything. And find a way to get some food in there.
That's right.
You got to eat. You got to eat.
You
it's the Joe Philbin Show presented by Everbank Coach. Appreciate it as always. Congratulations on the win and good luck this coming Sunday in Indy.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. That is Joe Philbin, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. When we come back, the new president and CEO of the Miami Dolphins will join us. You're listening to the Finsiders and you're watching us on Fox Sports Florida.
We return to the Finsiders now.
Welcome back to the Finsiders on a Dolphins Monday. Great to hear from Joe Philbin. And now time to visit with the new guy in town, the new president and CEO of the Miami Dolphins, Tom Garfinkel, who was introduced earlier today by Stephen Ross. Welcome to town and congratulations.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
No, it's our pleasure to have you here. This is exciting, obviously, for you, for this organization. You could tell for Steve Ross the way he was talking about it. What's your vision for the Miami Dolphins here as we move forward?
Well, as I talked about, I think first and foremost, to be about winning football. And I think everybody in this organization is here, including me, to support Joe and the coaching staff and Jeff Ireland and all the players on the field, you know, to make sure that they have the resources and the freedom to do their job so we can go out and win football games. And that when they do, the fans have a place to come that is a first-class experience, every aspect of it, from traffic to parking to concessions to, you know, every aspect of that experience.
Well, you talk about winning football, and you got one under your belt yesterday. We'll call you 1-0. That's all right. You got a chance to go to Cleveland to watch the game, and yeah. I imagine that was a fun experience.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to be there. I have some friends at the Browns, so it was kind of fun to beat them, too, in a friendly way. It was a great way to start the job. I think, you know, just coming in on a Wednesday or something and here's your desk and get started to be in Cleveland with Steve and Matt Higgins and everybody else in the team and be there for a win was pretty special.
Tom Garfinkel is the new president and CEO of the Dolphins. He is on Twitter at Tom Garfinkel. Prepare to get fired up on Twitter because our fans love talking on Twitter. Give us a little background on yourself for the Dolphins fans. Says, okay, Tom Garfinkel is the new president and CEO. Where do you come from? And the short version, I guess, of your life story.
Sure. Yeah. I moved around quite a bit growing up. I lived mostly 7th grade through high school in Walnut Creek, California. Grew up playing football, loved the game. Wasn't good enough to play big-time Division I college football, but went to the University of Colorado and then moved around quite a bit. Went to graduate school at the University of Michigan and really feel like I've been preparing, you know, for 20 years for this job. So I've been very fortunate throughout my career to have a lot of great mentors, including CEOs of very successful organizations, and I'm just thrilled to be here.
Aside from the obvious, which is winning football, what we talked about, your vision for this organization, your goals, maybe short-term and long-term for the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, I think short-term, I really just want to come in and learn as much as I can, listen to fans, listen to employees, find out really where we are, and then work together as an organization. I don't think any one person can create a great organization, if you will, or create great outcomes. It takes a group of people working together. And so, that'll be the kind of culture we want to create where it's very results-based, it's a meritocracy, but, you know, where we have fun, where we can make an impact on the community, but really where it's about, you know, results and about creating a first-class organization like Steve talks about.
Coming from Southern California, moving all the way across the country here to South Florida, you come with your family, a wife, and three young sons. They got to be pretty excited about the move, too, I imagine.
They are. They're here. You can ask them. But I think, we've been tooling around Miami a little bit, having some fun, and we're excited to get settled in, for sure.
Very nice. Well, congratulations to you, and very excited to work with you and to sort of see where this thing can go. It's a fresh start year for the Miami Dolphins in a lot of ways, and now in another way as well.
Thank you very much, Jesse. Appreciate you having me.
No, our pleasure. Thanks for coming in. Remind everybody, you can create families with your family that'll last a lifetime at the home opener against Atlanta. It's the kids' kickoff, and it's all about families. All kids 15 and under get $15 tickets plus a free Dolphins Fathead. Visit dolphins.com to get your tickets today. Big thanks to Tom Garfinkel. We'll take a break, come back, and put a wrap on the first hour of the show. You're listening to the Finsiders, and you're watching on Fox Sports Florida. Welcome back to the show with former Dolphin Sam Madison and John Congemi. I'm Jesse Agler. We'll take your text messages at 347-347. Your phone calls at 1-855-GO-FINS. Big thanks to Steve Ross, Joe Philbin, Tom Garfinkel, and Brent Grimes are all swinging by back-to-back-to-back-to-back segments. Had a nice time hearing from those guys as we sort of continue to break down the 23-10 win over the Cleveland Browns. Meanwhile, while we were away, a little bit of a reported roster move by the Miami Dolphins. Devin Smith, a rookie corner out of the University of Wisconsin, tweeted that he signed with the Dolphins. So there you go. Devin Smith, who played at Wisconsin, an undrafted guy, signed with Dallas after the draft this year, spent a little bit of time in the preseason with Pittsburgh, and was let go there, signs with the Dolphins. The cornerback situation, a little bit in flux for Miami. You have some injuries to young guys, and so they add a body there. Devin Smith added to the mix, reportedly. He's reporting it, but no official word yet from the team. All right, throughout the show, we like to check in with Tristan Jones. She's in the Metro PCS Comment Center, and get to the fan questions. Remember, if you're watching on TV, you're listening on the radio, or you're listening online, we got the big live chat at Dolphins.com. You can just jump in. It goes for the full 2 hours and hang out with other Dolphin fans, and we try to answer a bunch of their questions throughout the show as well. So let's go over to Tristan.
Before we try to do that, you did mention Metro PCS, didn't you? At Metro PCS, you can get ultra-fast, unlimited 4G LTE at an unbeatable price. That's all the speed you need without the annual contract. We have it, Metro PCS. As you can imagine, these guys are pretty chatty today. And Fish Filet says, do you see the Miami Dolphins moving the pocket more to help with the protection on the offensive line since Ryan Tannehill is good on the run?
I mean, that would be the short answer for me. John, you're my quarterback. What do you think? Jimmy. I mean, we didn't see much of it yesterday. I think there was a zone read play at one point. But do you expect to see more of Tannehill on the run, whether it's zone read, whether it's bootleg, sprint out, anything?
I possibly think that will be in the game plan maybe in week two, because Ryan does throw the football perfectly on the run. I mean, I think he's just as good in the pocket as he is on the run, and most times you're not as accurate on the run. So I do believe that Mike Sherman, the offensive coordinator, will get a little bit more of moving the pocket to ease the pass protection, because sometimes when you're facing guys that know where the quarterback's going to be for 38 times in a row, that's how many attempts that the Miami Dolphins had yesterday, it's an easy target. So you'd like to move the pocket a little bit, but without simplifying it too much for the defense. You want to be able to have that flexibility, and I think you'll see that more as the Miami Dolphins get into the regular season, game two, game three, game four.
All right, Tristan, what else you got over there?
All right, our friend Vero Finn fan says, do you see teams now paying a little more attention to Brian Hartline as well as Wallace in terms of coverage, which will open up Brandon Gibson and Charles Clay, who both had good games yesterday?
I mean, you can't give everybody attention. That's the nature of the game, Sam. I mean, yesterday, okay, they wanted to give Mike Wallace the attention. Brian Hartline says, thank you very much, 100-whatever yards later. There he is. I mean, that's the tough thing about playing defense. If you have multiple receivers who can hurt you, you can't take everybody away.
Yeah, the one thing you guys asked me when we added Mike Wallace, you know, how would this, you know, relate to the defensive side of the ball? What it really does, it's going to take that safety away, and it's going to be a lot of more one-on-one matchups. So if you're going to try to double somebody else, then it's going to mean that two other guys are going to be wide open. That's going to be the tight end or that third wide receiver or the running back coming out of the backfield. So it's all about how the offensive coordinator, Mike Sherman, and Coach Philbin really break down the offensive side, the defensive side of the ball of the team that they're playing, and try to find that matchup. And we always sit here and we say that it's a chess game. It really is. So whenever they're bringing that nickel back or that nickel linebacker in, that is where the chess matches begin for the quarterback, the offensive lineman picking up who's blitzing, and then trying to make the quarterback find that one-on-one matchup with those secondary guys or that safety that's in the football game. So it's fun to watch, because now we finally see what speed really does to a football team, mm-hmm. and how it can affect and break down everything else, and now having the pieces opposite that speed, Mike Wallace, when you have Gibson and you have Hartline making those catches and moving the chains for your young quarterback.
Makes a lot of sense. And again, that's the nice thing about having all these options and being able to spread it out offensively, is that they can take one of those guys away. Last year, if they played this game, it's Joe Hayden across from Brian Hartline the whole day. He doesn't have the success that he had yesterday. Not to say Brian Hartline can't get open against Joe Hayden, but it's a tougher matchup.
Mike Wallace, he couldn't get open. Yeah, it's the same thing.
I mean, it is. And so, okay, you're going to take take away the one guy, well, we got the other guy.
Right.
And that ain't bad at all. All right, that's the end of the first hour of the show on this Dolphins Monday. If you're with us on the radio, we'll continue until 7 o'clock as we do every night. You can also listen, of course, on Dolphins.com. Appreciate everybody hanging out with us, and thanks again to all the great guests we had in the first hour of the show. Brent Grimes, Steve Ross, Joe Philbin, Tom Garfinkel. Anytime you miss an interview, you can check it out at Dolphins.com. Radio show continues next, right here on 940 Wins.
The Finnsiders.
I got just one question.
What is that?
What award has the live chat won?
Oh, we used to give out gold stars.
That's right. That was a
That's
thing
the only
for
thing
a little
I can think
of
is that we gave out gold stars.
Hey, by the way, happy birthday.
Oh yeah.
Thank
happy
you.
Happy birthday to Tristan. Happy birthday to Tristan. Happy birthday to Tristan.
I know the guys are in the live chat. They're singing.
They're all singing.
Sam, that was beautiful. Thank
happy
you.
Happy birthday to Tristan.
Very nice.
Thank you so much. I'm shocked you didn't take up a career in music after football.
John,
so good.
John and I had your backup, by the way.
Yeah.
I heard that.
Bring the lefty in.
I don't mean backup vocals. I mean, like, second string, third string.
I like how you save that for the radio, guys.
Yeah. It was a little serious on TV.
I know.
The TV thing, man, you know, it's the first day, everybody's all tight, but we probably should have gotten it in there. I'll take the hit on that. That's my... Yeah. I mean, either one of these guys could have said something, but I'll take the hit on it.
All right.
I'm the host. I get it. That's on me.
Either
That's
way.
On me. Well,
thank
happy
you.
Birthday.
Thank
and everybody you. In the live chat, be sure to wish Tristan Jones a happy birthday. What number is this? 21, 22?
Two something.
There you go. All right. Two something.
Sour number.
Number
Tristan
Jones.
Sour number.
Two.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
All right. 347-347 if you want to text in. 1-855-GO-FINS if you want to call in. We obviously have a lot to discuss as we break down yesterday's victory. 23-10 over the Cleveland Browns. Yeah, we started the show talking a little bit about the Mike Wallace situation, and I know that'll come up again. But you know, the run offense was frustrating. The defense was fantastic. But can we talk a little bit more about Ryan Tannehill in the second half?
Let's do it.
I mean, this guy, he came out, and the Cleveland Browns knew pretty much beyond a shadow of a doubt that he was going to throw the ball every snap,
right.
Every snap. Because once you got into the late third quarter, mid-late third quarter, and certainly into the fourth, you know, until it became 4-minute drill time, they knew the Dolphins just couldn't get it going offensively. And so, you know, they've got some good pass rushers. They've got some good outside linebackers, and they're 3-4. They can get after the quarterback. And Ryan Tannehill stood back there, took a couple of hits, and continued to deliver really good passes to his wide receivers. And I've heard a lot of people say that the second half of that game yesterday is as good as we've seen Ryan Tannehill in a Dolphin uniform. The word that Mike Sherman used to describe the way he looked was poised. He just looked poised back there. I think that's a nice word, John. Just nothing seemed to bother him in the second half of the game yesterday.
He seemed as comfortable as you could be in a quarterback that's taking that many shots. You know, he was sacked 4 times. He was moving around within the pocket. He was trying to buy time outside of the pocket. But he never gave the sense of being rattled. He was in control of the football game. And I think that's what you're looking for in that progression from year one to year two, is being able not only to lead your team late in a football game, put points on the scoreboard, and make it feel like it's a comfortable win instead of a one-possession game where one play can turn a win into a loss for the Miami Dolphins. I think Ryan Tannehill took the first step in becoming a quarterback that not only you can trust, but you feel like that's our guy. That's our guy. We're going to win. We're going to lose. We're going to go as far as Ryan Tannehill is going to take us. And that's comforting for a fan, and I'm sure it's comforting for the guys in that locker room.
Yeah, it was, just, again, a really, really nice effort from Ryan Tannehill. And you got to figure next week, even with the great Dolphin defense, you'd have to score some points against Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts. And you feel pretty confident about his abilities, obviously, too. If you get the run game going, it's going to make it that much easier. We were talking, by the way, before the break about Devin Smith, the rookie corner out of Wisconsin, who tweeted that he signed with the Dolphins. Adam Beasley, the Miami Herald, is reporting that Smith has been added to the practice squad, not the 53-man roster. So that changes that story a little bit, obviously. That's, again, Adam Beasley, the Miami Herald, reporting that rookie corner Devin Smith has been added to the Dolphins practice squad. Speaking of cornerbacks, how about this question that came in from Ron in California? He texts to 347-347. Do you think Mike Wallace will be matched up against Vontae on Sunday in Indianapolis as we start to sort of look forward to that one just a little bit?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's going to be solidified and known as that number one cornerback, you know, for Indianapolis. So we're definitely going to see, you know, how that plays and how it pans out. You know, I remember a couple of years ago when we played Pittsburgh down here, and you know, they didn't really have a lot of guys, you know, with Sean Smith as well as Vontae, you know, going from one side to the other. So we didn't really know, or I don't know what to expect, you know, from this matchup. But you can expect the same results that they had this past week against Cleveland Browns. It's going to be a lot of double teams because it is a nightmare, you know, for a defensive coordinator to put together a game plan to say, hey, I feel confident with the guys that I have on my roster to go one-on-one with Mike Wallace and Brian Hartline as well as Brandon Gibson and just letting this thing play out the way that it can. So, yeah, I'm going to say yes. You're going to see Vontae Davis one-on-one with them, and, you know, we'll see what happens, how they throw different coverages at him to see how Tannehill reacts this week.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, so we'll obviously talk more about Indianapolis as the week goes on and on. In the meantime, more texts about the Cleveland game at 347-347, phone calls at 1-855-GO-FINS. So what didn't happen in the run game? Why couldn't the run game get going? I guess those are the more pertinent questions moving forward. We can tell you all day it was 23 carries for 20 yards, with the longest run of the day being 5 yards. The numbers speak for themselves, but the why is obviously the question that Joe Philbin and Mike Sherman and Jim Turner and Jeff Nixon and everybody else is going to be working towards over the course of the next couple of days. Here's sort of the short version of the explanation that Joe Philbin gave to the media earlier today. He said, first off, give Cleveland, you know, some credit. They did a good job setting the edge. And again, they've got good outside linebackers in their 3-4 defense, and they did a good job setting the edge. He said also the Dolphins had trouble creating space in the run game, and he said that the running backs did not break enough tackles. All right, so the first one and the third one are somewhat self-explanatory. If you get a situation where you're one-on-one as a running back, sometimes you got to win. Sometimes right. You got to get out of that guy's grasp and pick up a few more yards. You have to have more yards after contact. Okay, Cleveland does a nice job setting the edge. You give them credit there, but the Dolphins had trouble creating space. That's something that maybe right off the bat sounds like it's an offensive line thing, and to an extent it is, but the running backs, they got to take some responsibility in that situation as well, right?
Yeah, they definitely have to take some responsibility in that, and it's being sometimes when you go back and look over the last couple of years with Reggie Bush, we always said, hey, you need to slow down, you need to be patient sometimes, and you still have to understand that we still have young running backs in the backfield behind this offensive line. So, you know, and they have speed. So majority of the time, they want to get the ball and they want to go 100 miles an hour. No, you can't do that. You have to let everything develop. You have to let it break down sometimes, and then you'll be able to hit the hole. But, you know, looking at the way that the offensive line was lining up, I don't know if you and Keith saw it the same way, John, but it looked like the splits were a lot tighter. And that just going to cause problems because now the defensive tackle or the defensive end, they just squeeze one guy down to the other one, and you have two butts lined up right together. So it's making a natural wall. So I'm pretty sure that they will go back and they'll look at every little detail and every little aspect of this running game, because like he said, it was a very good defense that they faced yesterday in the running game, and it showed, because there was no real gaps or no real lanes to really hit it hard.
I thought Cleveland did a nice job, Sam, as well, and I agree with you about the butts, and bring in an extra guy into you know, closer to the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
You know, they timed it up right. You can disguise in pass coverage, and you have to be really sneaky and kind of coy about what you're doing. Same goes for the run defense. You don't want to show that eighth guy or that seventh guy bringing him down close to the line of scrimmage too quickly, because, you know, Ryan will be able to check in and out of things. So I thought Cleveland timed up that extra guy coming from the secondary close to the line of scrimmage very well. And I think the Dolphins had a tough time establishing the line of scrimmage. They had a tough time of moving people against their will. And credit the Cleveland Browns. I thought Sheard and Kruger did a nice job, with Coach Philbin said, of setting the edge. And there was really nowhere to run. There were a lot of bodies in tight quarters. And, you know, even if the running backs did the best job they could of pressing the hole and making sure they were trying to go north and south right away, there was not a whole lot of crease or running rooms to really get into your running game.
Yeah. And again, look, 23 carries, 20 yards, it's not going to happen. If I would have told you, though, on Friday during the show that they were going to attempt 23 rushes and average less than 1 yard per
loss.
Carry. Yeah, 100 times out of 100, you would have told me the Dolphins lose the game. Not only do they win the game, they win it by two scores, 23-10. And again, that's a little bit of a credit to Ryan Tannehill. Last week, Joe Philbin says, from Ryan Tannehill this season, he wants to see improved decision-making, throwing the ball with more accuracy, and making plays at critical times. It's just one game, and these are the kinds of goals that he's going to be measured against over the course of 16 games, and hopefully a couple more than 16. Mm-hmm. But improved decision-making, I think we saw that yesterday, as compared to last year. Throwing the ball with more accuracy, you can probably talk to that better than I can, but making plays at critical times, there's no doubt whatsoever about that one. Ryan Tannehill starting to check those things off that Joe Philbin's looking for this year.
Third down efficiency, 50% for the Miami Dolphins. Take a look at just two throws. The touchdown, obviously, to Brian Hartline, that was a strike that had to be in the right spot at the right time. He needed, to drill that football in. He put enough touch on it so Brian could get underneath it. And then the other one that comes to mind is the back shoulder seam throw to Charles Clay. He threw that pass in the only spot it could be caught, and he threw it caught, meaning that he threw it to the back shoulder where Charles had no chance but to turn and catch the football in that open window. And I think that was one of those throws that Ryan Tannehill looked at today and probably knew right when he threw it that was one he could, hang his hat on. That was one he knew he needed to locate with the right velocity in the right spot. And on both of those throws, they were flawless.
Clay had a nice game, too. 5 catches for 54 yards, including the 20-yarder right there. How nice is it to sort of be beyond the preseason and talking about
it's great.
These games that matter? It is great. Don't get ready for a shorter preseason, though. You see that news?
No.
Ian Rappaport of NFL Network has said the league has studied the preseason, and any changes to the number of preseason games won't come for 3 to 5 years, per a league source. He says that basically the publicly financed stadiums have leases that guarantee them 10 home games, and so that sort of takes years to untangle from a contractual standpoint. So get ready for the preseason to sort of remain as it is for at least another 3 to 5 years. That's from Ian Rappaport of NFL.com. All right, second hour of the show is off to a fun start. We feel a little looser, right, in the second hour of the show.
Definitely.
Sam got the big hour number two. We did the birthday song for Tristan. I think Cubanation, our buddy, he has the text of the year, or at least the day for Cubanation. He goes, the 6 o'clock hour now is like when the company finally leaves and the family members can take their pants off and be themselves.
Yeah, all the suits are gone. All the suits are gone.
Cubanation.
Very well said. Very well said, Cubanation. We love you up in Jacksonville. 347-347 if you want to text in. 1-855-GO-FINS if you want to call in. I don't think he was being literal. It was a metaphorical thing. You loosen your belt.
Right.
You tie knot, gets a little bit more loose. That's the kind of thing.
Got it.
That he's, before you freak out, that he's talking about over there. Attention fanatics, you can now ride Tri-Rail to and from all Dolphin home games. Avoid traffic and save money on parking. Visit dolphins.com/tri-rail for details. We'll take a break, come back, get to some questions with Tristan. We'll talk a little bit also about halftime adjustments, because we saw those certainly from the Miami Dolphins yesterday. A lot more to come. You're listening to the Finnsiders on 940 Wins and live on dolphins.com.
Into the Finnsiders now.
Here it comes. 4th and 2. Devon Bess in motion. Rhymes chasing him. Pressured sack by Cameron Wake, his third of the day. Just
hat-trick.
Overpowered the tackle on that side.
Hat-trick. Oh, that's why he goes to Pro Bowls right there. What a play by 91.
Oh, Cam Wake. How have we not talked more about Cam Wake so far today? 2.5 sacks. I'm still saying 3, by the way. That first one, I mean, they gave a half to him.
How did they get a half a sack?
They gave a half to him and a half to Starks.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Randy Starks. And Cam Wake had him. He's our drag guy down. And
we just got to start calling him Mr. Sack again. That's his name. He's still Mr. Sack.
He is Mr. Sack. He was absolutely Mr. Sack yesterday. Yeah. He was ferocious.
Yeah.
He was just absolutely ferocious. How about some of these numbers just for the defense in general?
Okay.
6 sacks, mm-hmm. 16 official QB hits, mm-hmm. 3 interceptions, a forced fumble, and Cleveland was just 1 of 14 on third down.
Hey, that's getting it done. Been preaching turnovers. You heard Brent Grimes earlier talking about, hey, that's all we've been hearing all since the OTAs in the quarterback school, preaching turnovers, and all of a sudden you get it done. It makes you feel extremely happy. I don't care. Even with Brent Grimes, for me, yes, I think he played a pretty good game, but in all, they got what they wanted to get done accomplished. So you feel a little bit like all those extra ball drills, the ball drills mm-hmm. that I brought, you know, to the football team, and we're throwing the ball up. It helped because the acrobatic catch by Patterson, and then just seeing Nolan Carroll right in the pocket of the wide receiver, and the ball is coming to drop right in his breadbasket, coming up with an interception, you know, his third career of the third of his career. So it just had to be fun for those guys to go out there and get it done that way.
If I can be so bold, I will admit I was wrong on something. Wow. Doesn't happen a lot of
the time. Yeah, you're right.
I'm pretty pig-headed. I am pretty pig-headed.
Get this on tape, Copers.
Yeah. I was a little bit skeptical. When I heard all the talk, you know, last year, this year, from Kevin Coyle and his guys saying, oh, we're working on the takeaways. We're drilling the takeaways more. Because we had heard it from the previous defensive coordinator as well. And I was thinking to myself, to me, every team is emphasizing it because their takeaways, for goodness sakes, they're the most important thing on defense, or one of the most important things on defense. And I was very skeptical that, oh, them saying that they're emphasizing it was going to actually change anything on the field. But after seeing the Dolphins throughout the preseason, after seeing the Dolphins yesterday, after hearing the same thing from the Cowboys defense and watching the way they played against the Giants last night, and look, the interception where Eli throws it right to the guy, you know, that's something else altogether. Right. But you could just see anytime they were trying to tackle a ball carrier, there were three, four guys trying to rip it out. And that's coaching, I'm convinced. Yes. Like, that is coaching. And maybe when we hear that a defensive coordinator is emphasizing it, they're not really emphasizing it. But I can tell now, and again, it's not even about the results as much as it is the effort when trying to prove this point. I don't think there's any question that Kevin Coyle has legitimately, not just, you know, saying it, but legitimately going out there and emphasizing turnovers on his guys. The same way that they were doing it with Lane or Monty Kiffin and everybody else in Dallas. I mean, you can tell there is a difference. They're not just saying we're emphasizing turnovers. They're not just practicing it. They're translating all that onto the field, and I give them a ton of credit for that.
Well, even last year in training camp, I think all three of us, we were sitting up there together. It was the first couple of days, and I was like, Jesse and John, I'm like, this is unbelievable. Do you see what they're doing mm-hmm. right now? I saw them working on defensive back drills, working with the ball, and it was on a consistent basis every day. Over and over and over and over again. I was like, you know what? I like this guy. I like Kevin Coyle. I like the way that he's expressing, you know, working on ball drill, because that's how it happens. It just doesn't happen by osmosis. You just can't not just going to sit here and think that you're going to automatically go out there and get an interception when it haven't hit your hands over 100 times. Wide receivers, what do you guys do? Y'all throw the ball at one another over right. and over and over and over. So when it hits your hand, it just becomes second nature just to grab it, see the tip, catch the fat, and then tuck it away. And it has to be the same way with the defensive back. And Kevin Coyle, he started it last year, and the young guys picked it up, and then they carried it over to this year. Then Brent Grimes, as well as Patterson, he came in late. They already know about those things, focusing on catching the ball, turning it over. And then the younger guys, they just came in and just fit right in. So for it to happen yesterday, I can believe you, Jesse. They worked on it, and it came to happen for them.
I mean, it was only a matter of time, because the way they work on it and the focus that they put on the beginning of practice, so we've seen it one time, we've seen it every practice in the bubble, where they go in and it's the entire team. It's just not the defensive backs. It's just not the, you know, the defensive linebackers or the defensive ends. It's the entire right. football team that are working on offensively securing the football, defensively getting on loose fumbles, you know, picking off balls in the air, doing anything they can to get their hands on the football. And that's the way this team has to be to win football games. You're not going to go through seasons where you're going to, you know, maybe cause 16 turnovers and only get three or four of them and be able to win football games on a consistent basis. This has to be the norm. This has to be the thing that happens on a consistent basis for this football team to get where it needs to be. Remember that gap in the AFC East between New England and Miami last year. The only way that they can close that gap is to play better offensively, to play better defensively, and to create more opportunities for this team to win football games, to score points. They have to be in the 20s, and it just doesn't happen by scoring offensive touchdowns. It happens by creating on defense and getting into the end zone and shortening the field for those guys on the offensive side. It started on Sunday, and you hope this trend continues.
All right, let's go out to the phones and start to hear from you guys. Remember, you can also text the show at 347-347. We'll check in with Tristan a couple more times as well. She's chatting with everybody online at dolphins.com. Mark is in North Miami. What's up, Mark?
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Nice win yesterday. And I'm just calling because all morning, all day, I've been listening to every radio station in the city. And nobody has spoke about Deion Jordan being the only D lineman who actually beat Joe Thomas 1-on-1 yesterday. I don't know if the sack was wiped off because he grabbed Whedon by the face mask, so you guys can tell me that too. But he actually beat Joe Thomas, the best left tackle in football, 1-on-1 yesterday, and nobody spoke about that. So I want to hear you guys think about it.
All right, yeah. Deion Jordan was credited with a sack. It's not a dead ball foul, so the play happens. They didn't, replay the down. So the sack counts, but of course the face mask, from a practical standpoint, makes it a little bit less exciting than if it hadn't. He did beat Joe Thomas on that play, but Olivier Vernon played really, really well against Joe Thomas throughout the afternoon, and Olivier Vernon was out there for 59 snaps. On defense, Deion Jordan was out there for 17 snaps. And that's not a surprise, of course, because Olivier Vernon is the starter, and Deion Jordan is, if you look at the depth chart, third string at defensive end, on that side. Now, that said, a really nice start for Deion Jordan. And that was impressive. You got a little glimpse of the future, I think, on that play. And obviously the face mask is what it is. Here's what Kevin Coyle, the defensive coordinator, said about Deion Jordan today. He said, "We were pleased with Deion Jordan getting into the ballgame and flashing, showing some of his real athletic skills, both on special teams and defense. It was really good to see that. He's had limited reps up until now. Now we can get him in the mix more and more, and I think we'll be seeing more of him as we go forward." That's Kevin Coyle, the defensive coordinator, on Deion Jordan. He used the word flash. I think that's a great word to kind of describe what we saw from Deion Jordan yesterday. 17 snaps on defense, 17 snaps on special teams, but there was a moment or two we go, "Oh, there's 95. There's the third overall pick."
And he's not hard to miss when he runs out on the football field. He's got to be one of the tallest guys that come out, on defense or on special teams for the Miami Dolphins. And it was nice to see. I mean, for all the time that he's had off during, training camp and during preseason and not being able to play in the games all the way through those five preseason games, it was nice to see him get 17 defensive snaps and time on special teams and being able to contribute in some fashion, and not only rushing the passer, but he was in coverage for a couple plays. And it was nice to see Derek Shelby get in as well. That's a guy that's going to have to contribute. When guys need snaps off, you don't want the level of play to go down at all. And those two guys give you that. They're going to be able to give you consistency at the defensive end spot, and that's all Kevin Coyle is looking for. When those guys get their opportunities, when their numbers are called, to go out and not drop the level of expectation or the level of effectiveness for this defense, and it was nice to see.
It definitely was nice to see, and that's just the beauty of having Deion Jordan and why all of a sudden you look at the gym like, why he go up and move up and get this guy? As soon as he get on the football field, guess what? He put pressure on the quarterback. And of course, Olivier Vernon, he's a starter, and now it just so happened if you have Olivier Vernon and you have Deion Jordan line side by side, it's going to create a nightmare for that running back and that tackle, especially if they start to do twists, stunts, all of those different things because of his length. Even though he's long and he's lanky, he still has that power bull rushing, has those athletic ability to be able to get in and out of little small windows where those guys are in. It bunched up tight. So, it was fun to see him get into the football game, but special teams is where it started for him. He went out there and he blew somebody up right off the bat, and that was fun to see. And it just carried over to him when he went into the defensive side of the ball. He was pumped up. He was ready to go. And this is what we can expect. Some big plays coming from him. I don't know if it's going to be next week or the third week, but it's going to be soon. And there it is. It was the flash.
The main point is, it's just the beginning.
It's the beginning.
Just the beginning for Deion Jordan. I don't think there's any question about that. Finance your next big purchase with a Popular Community Bank home equity line of credit. Popular Community Bank offers flexible terms and low rates. Call 888-317-9062 to apply. We'll take a break, come back, do a little chat's choice, check in with Tristan, and get to some more of your questions. It's a Dolphins Monday, 23-10, Miami over Cleveland yesterday. You're listening on 940 Wins and Dolphins.com.
Get your voice heard on the Finsiders. Text the show right now at 347-347. That's 347-347.
Back with former Dolphin Sam Madison and John Congemi, looking back on this Dolphins Monday at the 23-10 victory over the Cleveland Browns on yesterday. It was a little bit ugly at halftime. Dolphins trailed 7-6. They had some turnovers. They weren't able to take advantage of them. And the Browns got a late touchdown that made you feel a little bit uncomfortable about the way the game was going. But then Miami got the ball to start the second half, and the Dolphins went three and out, and you go, okay, I'm not sure how I feel about this, but eventually Ryan Tannehill gets going, and a couple of quick, nice drives leading to some points, and all of a sudden the Dolphins were in control.
Jess, you know when I felt the most, I guess, uneasy watching the football game, and Sam, was when the Dolphins got one of the interceptions. I think it was the second interception by Dmitri Patterson, and they got the ball teed up, really nice field position. We went three plays and we went minus 4 yards.
Yeah, and got the field goal.
And got the 49-yard field goal. And I was like, man, that's the opportunity where if you go down and you get 6 points and you're up 10-0, that's that two-score cushion that Joe Philbin and the offense could feel a little bit more comfortable about the football game because it was in our favor and we just didn't have the opportunity there to slam the door shut.
Fair or unfair to say, okay, you can get away with that against a team like Cleveland, maybe not so much against an Indianapolis, Atlanta, New Orleans, Baltimore, who happen to be the next month.
I think that's where you feel. You want to be able to take advantage of that, and I don't know if you're going to be able to get away with that when you have teams that can put points on the scoreboard, even though as strong as Miami defense looked yesterday, you're going to play some playmakers at the quarterback position. You're going to have guys around the quarterback that can score points and that can do it in one play. So I think those are the opportunities that you have to make sure that you get corrected. When you get a short field, don't settle for 3 points. Get the points when they're easy and get it a two-score game.
All right, let's do a little chat's choice. These guys have been hanging out online, and give them an opportunity to dictate where the conversation is going. Here are the options. State of the Dolphin running game, Olivier Vernon's game against Cleveland, offensive line play versus the Browns, Charles Clay, play of the linebackers yesterday, and of course a Bills-Patriots recap, sort of a regular season version of State of the Bills. I can't wait till the Dolphins actually get ready to play the Bills for the first time this year. And we're going to do State of the Bills that week if you vote for it, so be careful. But 40% want to do State of the Dolphins running game. Obviously yesterday, I mean, the state ain't good. But again, you win the game, and everybody in those meeting rooms today, tomorrow, Wednesday, Friday, probably some up in Indianapolis on Saturday, they're going to be talking up what needs to happen better and differently on the ground against the Colts, because you cannot average 0.9 yards per carry and win games in the NFL on a regular basis.
Well, yeah, and still, you know, you can't have that penetration coming through your line. I don't care if it's a running game. I don't care if it's the pass game. You know, watching the first couple of games, well, watching that Denver and that Ravens game, I wanted to watch one specific position, and that was the defensive tackle against the right guard. And I wanted to see, you know, how those quarterbacks were going to play, because I knew they were going to get pressure from the outside against both those quarterbacks. But when they get that pressure, seeing those quarterbacks, Peyton and Flacco, that they still have that pressure coming, being able to step up and throw. They got a lot of pressure on both sides of the ball, and I watched, you know, the Dallas game as well as the Giants game. The quarterback still, when they look to see that read 1, 2, and 3, and when you get ready to do that third one, step it up and throw it to your right, they still had a little bit of space, and we didn't have any space from that side. And this is why it's important for the guys to be in there throughout the course of the preseason. Make sure you're in shape, because the longer the game goes, and and I want everybody to pay attention to these first three games of the season. It's going to be some tough, hot football games, and guys are going to have to be in tip-top shape, because you're not in game mode as of yet because of those preseason games. You was getting in early, and then you was getting out. Now you're going to be there the whole entire game. You're going to take all 77 or 80 reps or 40 or 50 reps. You got to be in very good shape.
Sam, I think for the running game, you never got the feeling that we knocked anybody off the football.
Right. Yeah.
You never felt like you established
the line
of
scrimmage.
Well,
let me jump on that, because we're getting a bunch of texts now where everybody says, oh, you got to go sign this running back. I'm seeing Brandon Jacobs. I'm seeing Michael Turner, Willis McGahee, by the way, all of whom I think worked out for the Giants today. But, you know,
anybody that was walking worked out for the Giants today.
Exactly, and who can hold on to the football.
Right.
I mean, this wasn't exactly a situation where there were big gaping holes,
right,
and the guys didn't hit them. There, like you said, there was major penetration from the Cleveland defense and the Dolphin offensive line, and I'm sure these guys would tell you that. They didn't hold up their end of the bargain. Not saying the running backs couldn't have done some things better. There wasn't a lot of running room yesterday afternoon.
At some point, you know, you have to be able to break tackles, and you have to be able to hit creases, but on the other end of that, there weren't a lot of holes to hit creases and be able to press, you know, north and south. There was a lot of times where you were running into a brick wall and you were just trying to get 1 or 2 yards to make it a positive play, not lose yardage and not put yourself in 2nd and 13 or 2nd and 14 or 2nd and 11. You were just trying to get back to the line of scrimmage, and you're not going to have a lot of days like that because this Miami Dolphin offensive line is a lot better than what it played for 4 quarters against the Cleveland Browns. And I think you'll see them kind of work themselves into it. Hopefully it starts in week 2, because if they don't run the football against Indianapolis, there's a lot on tape now. There's a lot more to be seen, and it's going to make it tougher for Ryan Tannehill and make it tougher for Hartline and Gibson and Wallace and Clay to be able to do things in the passing game. So you have to have some semblance of controlling the ball, controlling the time of possession, and being able to establish, number one, the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, just because a guy was good in Madden 5 years ago doesn't mean he's the answer to the running game. And look, I'm not saying none of those guys can play. Maybe they can, and who knows, maybe they do bring in a running back. But, you know, somebody said, oh, they got to light a fire under Lamar Miller.
This isn't a motivational issue.
Right. This isn't that Lamar Miller didn't care or wasn't fired up for the game yesterday. It's that the Cleveland defense did a really good job shutting them down.
The one time Lamar Miller had a slight crease, he was able to make somebody miss to the right side and get 5 yards. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of running room for Miller or Daniel Thomas. So I was glad to see Daniel get airborne and go over touchdown, because that was the only way he was going to get into the end zone on that play.
Yeah. By the way, one of the sort of subplots of the victory yesterday, not only the Mike Wallace thing, which isn't even a thing, and I think we're mostly beyond that, Randy Stark's situation. Mr. Randy was caught on television. A little flip of the bird after his sack, and some people were suggesting that it was at the Dolphins coaches and that he's upset at the organization. I've gotten to know Randy Starks a little bit over the last couple of years. He is a very competitive, fiery guy. I don't see that. Now, granted, you can't get inside the guy's head, but I don't see it. Anyway, Randy Starks has broken his silence on the issue via Twitter, and isn't this the beauty of social media in 2013? A guy can kind of go out there and state his message the way he wants. And kind of a three-part message here from Randy Starks in the last couple of minutes. He said, if you don't know, I'm not worried about it. I'm just trying to help my team be successful. He continues, I never said anything about being upset at the coaches or organization. I'm over the contract issues. So that's Randy Starks coming out and giving his side of the story today after, you know, for the last 24 hours or so, hearing everybody hypothesize about what he was doing. So there you go. Another thing I'm just not worried about. Randy Starks is a really, really, really good football player. And whether his contract is extended or not, I don't know. There are several guys whose contracts may or may not be extended before the end of the season. Some of them are guys that have played huge roles. Some of them are guys that are just starting to play roles. That's the nature of pro football. And this organization will kind of go through it with those agents and try and work it out. Somebody texted in, and it's a good question. And he was asking, you know, some contracts are addressed, and he talked Rashad Jones, and some aren't yet, and he mentioned Starks or Solei. You know, what goes into sort of the decision to extend one guy at some point and not another guy? And mind you, there have been reports that there have been conversations involving these other guys and the front office. They just haven't, you know, come to fruition yet, and that's the nature of a negotiation. It goes up and down. Is there a priority level, you think, when it comes to different players and this kind of thing?
Yeah, you have to look at the position. I mean, when you look at a linebacker position, there's not a lot of linebackers out there that are making top dollar on the outside. And if you're going on the middle linebacker, then it's going to be a large number. But with defensive tackle, there's a large number out there when we're talking about the salary cap part of it. So you of course, if you can get somebody and bring them back in at a reasonable number, that's what they were able to do with Cole Meese. And now when you're talking about making everything work for the organization as well as a player, it has to go hand in hand. The numbers have to be correct. I mean, you just can't sign contracts because you still have to – everything has to be understood with the language of every 53 guys on this roster. And you just can't start spending money, because it's going to hurt you later on down the road. It happened to us a few years ago. So you don't want to get back into the same thing. So you have to let things play out. And you're just right now you're in that situation to where it's not only Randy Starks, it's probably 15, 20, 30 other guys around the National Football League that's going through the same exact things. Let your play do the talking, and your play will help your pockets later on at the end of the year.
I think that's all it comes down to,
that's
Sam.
That's it.
It has to work for both sides. It has to work for the player, and it has to work for the organization. And when those two things marry up, you have an extension on a contract. We saw it, I think it was last year with Cam. Mm-hmm. We saw it earlier with Rashad, and we saw it with Koa just the other day. So, you know, it's one of those things where you look at your years of service, you look at how healthy the guy's been, position of need, where's the money fall out, and does he play? And both of those guys in the middle, they've been so productive. They've been stellar with their play, and they hope that it continues because there's been offers made, and we'll see how it plays out. But for right now, you're getting paid, and you got to go out and play, and you got to go out and keep performing. And I think both those guys will do that at the highest level.
I like the guy who just texted me. He says, "Oh, Starks is tweeting about his contract issues right now." Yeah, that's how this conversation got started. But thank you for looking out. We appreciate that. And it's an interesting little story. To me, at the end of the day, I am worried about Randy Starks on Sunday and not any other day of the week. And on Sunday, he comes every single
week. Right.
And that's my only concern with Randy Starks, and it ain't a concern because of the way he plays on Sundays. All right, Lance Snacks wants you to come out to the Buffalo game. Visit Dolphins.com/Lance Snacks to register for a chance to win tickets for you and 19 of your friends to the Miami Buffalo game on October the 20th. Start your school year off right with Lance Snacks and the Dolphins. We'll take a break, come back, final segment of this Dolphins Monday show. Get us some more text messages at 347-347, maybe a phone call or two at 1-855-GO-FINS. And, of course, we'll check in with Tristan as well as she continues to chat with everybody online in the Metro PC. Yes, Comment Center. You're listening to the Finsiders on 940 Wins and on Dolphins.com.
Hi, this is Philip Wheeler. Keep it here for more of the Finsiders coming up in minutes.
Now, back to the Finsiders, your all-access pass to the 2013 Dolphins.
Play action fake. Tannehill back to throw. Fires. Wants it deep. Got Hartline. Touchdown. What a great throw and catch.
Wow. Brian Hartline beat his man by a step. Comes back home and gets himself a touchdown.
Brian Hartline, 34-yard touchdown reception from Ryan Tannehill. Might be the best throw I've seen Tannehill make in one season and one game so far. I don't know that he'd agree with that, but to me, it was as good as it got. Gave the Dolphins a 13-7 lead, and they would not look back. Beat the Browns yesterday, 23-10. Finance your next big purchase with a Popular Community Bank home equity line of credit. Popular Community Bank offers flexible terms and low rates. Call 888-317-9062 to apply. Talking in the last couple of minutes about Randy Starks, he's sort of tweeting right now about everything that's going on. He, while we were away, directly addressed the gesture that he made after the sack. Here's what he wrote. Joking with my teammates about getting a sack. Could have used a different gesture, but now it's over. Moving on. Next up, Colts. I like it, man. I like it. Randy Starks has just sort of taken to social media. He's saying, here's what happened. Not a big deal. Not worried about the contract. Let's move on and focus on the Indianapolis Colts, and let's focus on going 2-0. I like it. I like, you know, that the players can kind of directly go out there and give out their message, something they really weren't able to do prior to Twitter and social media really
Whoever
taking off.
Whoever thought, Twitter.
Yeah, even Don Shula is on Twitter. There he is, at Don Shula. Make sure you're following him. By the way, A Football Life on NFL Network featuring Don Shula premieres tomorrow night, I think at 8 o'clock. From what I've heard, really, really good. Really, really good. And obviously, if you're a Dolphin fan, that's a must-watch. So I think it's tomorrow night, 8 o'clock on NFL Network. If you've seen any of those Football Life documentaries, I guess, that they do. They did one on Jimmy Johnson. They're all really, even if it's a guy you didn't think you liked,
right,
you end up really liking the show. And so the Don Shula one promises to be really special. Looking forward, certainly, to checking that out. Before we get out of here on this Dolphins Monday, let's go back over to the Metro PCS Comment Center. Tristan Jones, the birthday girl.
Oh.
Get to some of her questions.
Speaking of checking out, let's check in with Metro PCS, where you can get ultra-fast, unlimited 4G LTE at an unbeatable price. That's all the speed you need without the annual contract. We have it, Metro PCS. So you guys know we get a ton of questions all the time about the playbook. And Mouth Breathers Anonymous says,
I like that guy.
Yeah, me too. He says, the offense still seemed pretty simplified yesterday. I think that they have a lot of tricks up their sleeves that we will see executed in the coming weeks.
Well, I'll sort of replay what I said last week about this. And again, it's one of the great misconceptions, I think, that a lot of football fans have. They think that the playbook you know, the binder, or now the iPad as it is just open every week. And that every week they just call one out of 1,000 plays or whatever it is in the playbook. And that's not the way this works. It isn't Madden where every week you have the entire playbook at your disposal. They take, you know, a very small percentage of the playbook and they apply it in a given week based on the team that they're playing, based on who's available because of injury or whatever. And the plays that they think are going to work the best for the coming game, they use those, they install those, they practice those over the course of the week leading up to this game. So every team in the NFL falls into what he just mentioned. Every team in the NFL has only shown a very, very, very small percentage of what they've got available in week one. Maybe his larger point, though, was that it was a little bit of a vanilla outing from the Dolphin offense yesterday. Is that a fair assessment of what we saw?
Well, when you're not successful running the football, there's not a whole lot you can do in the run game to make it, I guess, have some flair. You know, in the passing game, I thought they did a lot. I thought, you know, they were able to work the seams. They were able to work third down, the quick outs, the heart line. They took advantage of the man coverage. They got some crossing routes from Gibson over the middle. I thought they attacked the field well in the passing game. But in the run game is where we were limited. You didn't see a lot of counters. You didn't see a lot of zone read. You didn't see a lot of other things that maybe you could get to, because that's where the Dolphins were struggling mightily to get some semblance of a running game. So I think as we go along, you'll see a little bit more of movement of the pocket. I think you'll see maybe a hint of reverse or some misdirection in the run game. But for the running game to be effective, you have to do a little bit more, and they couldn't get on track with the basics yesterday.
Well, what happens is, I mean, the defense is going to dictate if you're going to be Manella or not, and that's what happens. They pretty much shut down our run. It was like, we're going to make you one-dimensional, and you make me one-dimensional, I'm going to take what you give me.
That's right.
Yes, those little shallow crossing routes were there, and you saw, if you watched the TV copy of the game yesterday, you see the middle of the football field is wide open. You know why? Because that safety that's supposed to be over there, he's all the way over top of Mike Wallace. So there is an open void. There is an open gap. Now you just have to get one of those wide receivers, running backs, or tight end in that gap and have enough time to throw the ball. So and he made the correct read. So, you know, you can't complain about the play calling. Everything's going to dictate week to week.
They won 23-10.
They won 23-10. That's the bottom line.
That is the bottom line. And Mike Sherman said today, he goes, hey, I can do some things better. He said, I can do some things better. And you hope that he does next week. But, I mean, you win by 13 points. We're cool. We're moving on. We're 1-0. By the way, Football Life with Don Shula tomorrow at 9 p.m.
9 p.m.
Time for a very, very abbreviated version of our final thoughts.
The fastest 2 minutes in the show.
Congratulations, Miami Dolphins. 1-0, and happy birthday, Tristan. Hope you have a great evening.
Happy birthday, Tristan, and congratulations to all NFL players. Got their first game under their belt set for tonight.
Great football weekend as far
yes,
as I'm concerned. University of Miami, nice little win on Saturday.
Louisville Cardinals.
Louisville, yeah, sure, why not? And what about Pitt? No, they're off.
We were off.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. And
we were off
Dolphins
last week, too.
Yesterday. You took Monday night off?
Yes.
Yeah, looked like it.
Gators took it off, too.
All right, hey, hope the TV thing went well for everybody out there. Again, we'll work on the video in the live chat online, and we'll just do it all over again tomorrow at 5, right here on 940 Wins.
You guys.
And Dolphins.com.